Welcome to the Life in Deepellum podcast, exploring the sacred in art, music, faith, and community.
Good morning, everyone. It's good to have you here today. For those of you who I haven't had the pleasure of meeting yet, my name is Bryson Hill. I'm the ministry intern here. And a fun little fact about me is I really like The Lord of the Rings. So, have you guys ever watched The Lord of the Rings trilogy? Like, all three of them, the whole thing? I mean, Peter Jackson did a great job with the series that won 17 of the 30 Academy Awards that the three movies were nominated for. And then the final one, The Return of the King, actually won Best Picture that year, which obviously means it's pretty good. So I guess I kind of wonder, what makes these movies so beloved? Why were they so popular? I think, you know, obviously the source material was good. Tolkien's book series was well-loved before that. But something I think that it does is it's got really great characters. You have just such a diverse cast here. For those of you who've seen it, you've got Aragorn, kind of the mighty king, the great warrior, the one leading the charge up at the front. You have the funny little rivalry turned best friends with Gimli the dwarf and Legolas the elf, because of course dwarves and elves don't like each other. You have just the incredible courage of little Frodo taking the ring, just a little hobbit taking the ring to all the way to Mordor, and of course the unwavering loyalty of the true hero, Samwise Gamgee, following for no other reason than he loved his friend. You just have these incredible characters that have just amazing story arcs. But there's something else here I think that it does really well in kind of a character development, like changing who people are as well, because I don't know if many of you know or pay attention to, there's actually four hobbits that go out. There's Frodo and Sam, and then you have this other little pair, Merry and Pippin. They're friends of Frodo and Sam, they know each other sort of, but the only reason they get roped into the adventure is they're stealing food, and they run into Frodo and Sam as they're starting their adventure and follow them. So they kind of bumble into this grand adventure, and for a good portion of it, they bumble around. They're kind of the comic relief characters. They're kind of just goofy. They're silly. They're distractible. They're not very heroic in the first movie. They don't really do a whole lot. But that's not the end of their story. So the really cool thing that I think happens with these two characters is they start off like this, but by the end of the series, Pippin is now a guard of one of the grandest cities of humans. And it's such an honor, and for a hobbit to play that role shows incredible strength, incredible bravery. And through that, he's saved the lives of some of the greatest heroes there. And then you've got Merry, who also has become the right-hand man to a king in another realm, and he saved that king's life on multiple occasions. So they go from these bumbling, silly little people that literally run into Frodo and Sam and drop cabbages to get into the adventure to saving kings' lives and being the most requested advisor to kings. And then for the real nerds, if any of those have read the books, which I have, so I have to put myself in that category, what you don't see is, so the movies end with kind of, the ring goes into Mordor, and then you get kind of an epilogue of everyone's happy and going about their lives, but the books have kind of a tacked-on scene to that, where the four hobbits go back to their homes, and they find it's been overrun by sort of the secondary antagonist, the evil wizard Saruman. And so the hobbits go, and these four tiny little hobbits take down what was essentially the second most powerful bad guy of the series, and they take their home back, and Merry and Pippin are instrumental in kind of creating that. So the really cool thing here, and I think what makes what makes the series as a whole so impressive is you have these people that are just who they are. They stand up as a mighty king or an incredibly brave person. But you also have people that grow. They develop. They change. And I think that use of sort of character development was really good in the movies as well as the books. And I guess you're kind of sitting here going, what does this have to do? Like, why is he starting with this? It makes no sense. Like, does he really just love the Lord of the Rings and had to tell us about it, or what? But it's like I said, they are incredible examples, Merry and Pippin, of character development, of growing into something much greater than what you were at the beginning. And the fact is everyone goes through character development. Everyone starts somewhere, and then they get better as their story continues. We see that with Peter as well. So we're continuing kind of our journey, looking through the lens of Peter following Jesus for the lead up to Easter and all of that as we go through Lent. And last week, we got introduced to Simon Peter, the fisher at the edge of the lake, that witnessed Jesus heal his mother-in-law, witnessed Jesus provide a miracle of fish, and whenever he has a chance to interact and it's called by Jesus to follow him, Peter's first words are, "Get away from me." You have this character who you would think, after witnessing all of these things, would be the hero, drop his nets immediately and chase after Jesus, but that's not what happens. He was having none of it. But Jesus pushed back through Peter, kind of kept on him a little bit, and Peter ended up, you know, following Jesus, as we know. And now we get to see the fisherman become something more, because we're stepping into a new part of the story. So we're going to be in Matthew, for those who want to be turning there, Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 to 33. I'll read that over in a moment, but at this point, the disciples have been following Jesus for a while now. They've seen the miracles, they've heard the teachings in the Gospel of Matthew that we're in. They sat while Jesus spoke, gave his great Sermon on the Mount that's two chapters in Matthew. They've witnessed the incredible things that Jesus is doing. They've been impacted. They've been changed by who Jesus is just a little bit. And immediately before the story we are reading, Jesus had just fed over 5,000 people with just a couple of fish, with 5 loaves and 2 fish. So they've seen all these things, they've done all this, and we're going to pick up our story in the text now. So verse 22 says, "Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, 'It's a ghost!' And they cried out in fear. But immediately, Jesus spoke to them and said, 'Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid.' Peter answered him, 'Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water.' He said, 'Come.' So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became terrified and began to sink. And beginning to sink, he cried out, 'Lord, save me!' Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, 'You of little faith, why did you doubt?' When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, 'Truly, you are the Son of God.' This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God." Now, most of the time, like, this is a popular passage. A lot of people have talked about this. They they've done this story quite a bit. It's a very important miracle. It's not only Jesus walking on the water, but Jesus is giving one of his followers the ability to walk on the water. So this is a story that's been spoken about a lot from a lot of different viewpoints. But I think what I've heard so much about it is this like admonition or like putting down of Peter, because they're like, Peter, you're already walking on the water. You see Jesus, and yet you doubted in your faith, and so you started to sink. So it's a warning of don't doubt in your faith or you begin to sink. That's what I've heard it preached sometimes is Peter's the bad guy. Peter's the character that didn't quite get it right, which is true. But sometimes we don't quite get it right. So maybe let's take a moment and before we go, I had to work on this, before I go into this immediate like, oh, well, Peter just didn't quite get it. Let's take a moment and let's try and extend some grace to Peter. Let's be honest about the situation that Peter was in. Because, one, look at his character development. He went from, get away from me, please, I don't need this in my life, I can't do this, to now, he's stepping out on faith. He's trusting that this makes no sense, this is water. I still don't know who this person is, because Jesus was still far off, and they're not sure if this was a ghost, they're not sure if this was Jesus, they weren't sure what this was. All they know is Peter asks this person, tell me to come to you, and I will walk on the water. In the midst of the storm, in the midst of the waves and the wind, when Peter is a fisherman, Peter grew up on the water. He knew, like, when it's calm, okay, maybe you can take a dip. Maybe while you're fishing, you hop in and you take a dip. That happens, every now and again. People would jump in to cool off, but that's in calm waters. When there's a storm brewing, the last place you want to be is on a boat in the water. And then on top of that, to be outside of a boat, on the water, in a storm, that's just a recipe for death. Peter knows this. Peter knows that stepping out and falling into that water, that boat's moving away. He's not getting back to it. And yet, he still says, call to me, and I will come to you. Peter grew just as those hobbits did, because he stepped out. He took that step, and he started walking on the water. And I think what's so cool is kind of in that, knowing that this is a death sentence, knowing that Peter would be swept away in an instant, it's not easy. This isn't just a simple little, like, there you go, it's good. This is a massive leap of faith, trusting that whenever I step on this water, I'll be on top of it. I'm not going in. And yet he does it anyway. And as the story continues, you know, we have this amazing trust of Peter here. We have Peter really stepping out, really showing that, like, I'm here, Jesus. I'm trying everything I can to be the disciple that you have for me. I'm doing everything in my power. I'm stepping out and trusting you with everything I have. But then he's taking some steps, and he's looking around, and I would imagine that wind felt really powerful on his face. I would bet it was hard to take some steps. Have you ever walked into a really powerful headwind? I grew up in West Texas. We have, people say like a 60 mile per hour wind is a gust. I'm like, that was a normal Tuesday. So I know what it's like whenever you have that wind against you and you've got to take a step, you feel it. So not only does Peter feel this wind blowing on his face, but he's looking around. I'm sure those waves weren't tiny little laps. I'm sure those waves were pretty scary. I mean, imagine you're standing on the water and there's waves crashing to your right and your left that might be bigger than you are. You might be watching something insane happening around you. All of a sudden, you know, those waves that maybe on the boat weren't that bad, but being in the midst of them, it's a lot worse. Peter realizes what he's done. Peter realizes just how dangerous the situation is. And he stepped into it. He kind of put himself in the situation, and that sets in, and now Peter starts to sink. But in the midst of that sinking, Jesus reaches out his hand, and he grabs Peter. Jesus saves Peter just as he was about to go under. He pulls him back to safety, and he pulls him back to himself. And then, yes, he does, you know, challenge Peter a little bit. He challenges Peter's faith. He asks why Peter doubted and started to sink. But I want to stop on that word doubt for a second. Because I think we hear the word doubt and we go to like this idea of like not fully trusting in something, or like, you know, being one foot in or one foot out type of thing. Like you're not fully diving in. And I know a lot of people have used this to be like, therefore, if you have any doubts in your faith, then you'll sink just like Peter. But New Testament scholar Alan Culpepper wrote about how this idea of the word doubt could be better understood as being double-minded. So it's not that Peter was going like, I don't know if you know, Jesus is Jesus. It's that maybe Peter was going, Jesus is Jesus, and I am in danger. And these are both valid thought processes. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not that Peter is doubting the faith or doubting the power of Jesus per se, or saying, I don't know if Jesus can do this. It's Peter's going, I'm scared. I'm scared, and I'm trusting, but I'm scared. And that divides Peter's focus a little bit. You know, have you ever been working on something? Like you've got a big project over here, but then you've got a big project over here, and you're slowly working on both, and you realize you're not making progress on either? I've done that a lot. You know, you get to final season, you've got a couple different papers ready, and yeah, it's a good time. But haven't we all been in that place? Maybe we've stepped out. Maybe we stepped out in faith. Maybe it was your faith. You did something bold in your faith. Or maybe it's your job. You took on, you said, I can handle this project. This one's all me. Give it to me. I got it. Maybe it's your family. You're like, hey, we're going through some stuff. I'm going to be the caretaker. I'm going to be the one that, you know, come to me with it, and I'll get it all taken care of. And maybe we thought we had a little more capacity to handle that than we really did. Maybe we thought we were more prepared, we had more to offer the situation than we actually did. Maybe we overestimated our abilities a little bit, but we stepped into it nonetheless. We stepped out in faith. So we're walking through just kind of seeing Peter's life. That's what this whole Lenten series is about. And really just seeing how similar our stories have been. So whenever you're in that moment where maybe you've bitten off more than you can chew, and you're coming to that realization, what does that feel like? It's a tough place to be. So when Renique and I first got married, she had a great opportunity to go and be a part of a ministry in New York City. So we got married in December of 2018, and in March of 2019, 3 short months later, we had enough funding to get a place to live there and to essentially move. So we said in March 2019, we packed up everything, 3 months newly married. That's a pretty big bite. Moving across the country, just the two of us, where only one of us had a set income, which was a self-funded income. This was not a guarantee. This was, we had people pledging to support us for this. That's what a lot of missionaries do. And so we were there on one self-funded income and a hope that I would find something. And March 2019 comes around, we move. April 2019 comes around, I still haven't found a job. Starting off looking for places that I'm qualified for or whatever, but very quickly, as money dwindled, becoming, who's hiring? Who will take me? What can I do? May 2019 comes around, and I get a job working UPS, and I do that, and that provides enough to float. But we were there a very short time when we realized we bit off a lot. We bit off way more than we could chew. I mean, you move, and now all of a sudden you don't think about it, but okay, we've got the apartment, we've got to buy furniture. You can't live in an apartment with no furniture. We slept on an air mattress for 2 weeks, and that was not ideal. Everything just started piling up. Everything just started hitting us, and we got really overwhelmed. Look, I understand exactly why Peter lost focus and had that divided attention here. You get those other things around you, you get those things coming in, and panic sets in. You go into survival mode of, I gotta do whatever I can do to get through this. But the beauty of that is God works wonders through the midst of that still. Because just as Peter began to sink, just as that divided attention happened, that fear set in, the panic set in, Jesus reaches out his hand and saves Peter, pulls him from the water. And something, again, give Peter credit here, because Peter walked on the water long enough to get close enough to Jesus that as Peter started to sink, Jesus could reach out his hand and save him. But Jesus did the saving, let's be real. And when we went to New York, we found ourselves overwhelmed with dwindling finances. But God reached out their hand. I had the job. We made it. Like, UPS isn't glamorous, but it was enough. We could survive. And so we stepped out, kind of like Peter, stepped out of the comfort of where we were and stepped into this new thing, this new experience. And we realized we got really overwhelmed and scared. And I was reading in preparation for this, another great scholar, Nadia Bowles Weber, wrote kind of a blog post focusing on this story, but the push of the post, I guess the tagline of it was, "Why I Hate the WWJD Bracelets." So you see something like that, and you're like, well, I have to follow this. Like, I know what those are. Those were very fun. but she writes about this, and man, she writes about how she always had a problem with them, and the reasons for why she has a problem with those and the story that we have today fit so well. One of the things she says about why she hates them is because asking the question, what would Jesus do, assumes that we can do the things that Jesus does. We aren't Jesus. Let's be real. We're called to imitate, but not to be. So one, that's a question that she always had a problem with, is why am I supposed to do what Jesus did? I can't be Jesus. How many times do we still have that mentality, though? I'm going to take it on my plate. I can do it. I can do this. I can accomplish this. We convince ourselves that we can do all of these incredible things and find ourselves very quickly, very easily overwhelmed. I mean, have you ever started something fully excited for the new experience only to find very quickly on, this is too much? You were convinced you had the capacity to add this to your plate, and you realize, what have I done? I've made a huge mistake. We overestimate our capacity of what it is that we can do, and then we've overcommitted, and we realize that we have all of these things, and it's just a compounding problem. Everything gets so much harder. Those manageable parts of our lives now become unmanageable. So while we had been okay with everything that we were doing, we added this new thing, and now everything becomes not okay. That's kind of what happens. But this is why this story and this point that Nadia Bowles Weber makes is so important. It's okay that we don't have that capacity. It's okay that we can't take everything on our own shoulders. We have nothing to prove to God. We have nothing that God never tells us, go and do all of the things, commit to everything. No is a nasty word. God never tells us that. God loves us unconditionally, right where we are. And yes, we are called to imitate Jesus, to be like Jesus, but not to be Jesus. And then she continues on and talks about in these moments where we're feeling scared or overwhelmed, feeling the weight of our world on the shoulders, just like the disciples in the boat. I think a lot of times she mentions this idea, and I think it's rare. I think it's true. You get in these moments of being overwhelmed, of being in a panic, of swarmed with anxiety, and you think, what have I done to make God so far away from me? I think we convince ourselves that when we're struggling and when we're really, really having a difficult time, that God is far away. We say that I've done something to make God be away from me. That's why I'm feeling these things. She talks about the doubt of the disciples here is not because they were afraid of the situation, but because they doubted that God was with them. But the reality was, God was with them the whole time. God had never left. The challenge of this story is not to wonder, why is God doing this to me? Where is God? The challenge of this story is recognizing that Jesus was right there. As Peter sank, as the world came on top of him, as everything came crumbling down, all of those plates that you were spinning come falling down, Jesus is there. And he helps you catch the plates. And sometimes some of them fall and they break. And that's okay. But never once is there a moment where Jesus is not ready. Ready to catch you when you fall. Ready to pull you out of that situation. Ready to pull you out of that danger. God is always there to reach out a hand when we need it. And I know that feeling, you know, when you've done everything in your power. You've done everything that you can, and it feels like it wasn't enough. And it just feels like, man, I messed up. I dropped the ball. And you feel in that moment that, you know, maybe where is God? You feel that doubt. You feel that panic set in a little bit. And that's what, man, I love that song we sang today. The Breastplate of St. Patrick. Oh, it's so good. So, I'm going to be real with y'all. That song, we've sung it a couple times here at Lyde since I've been here. That song has seriously messed me up. So the first time I ever heard it, I'd only been here a week or two. And they sang it, and I was just, it was the first time I'd ever heard it, and I was reading the words, I was connecting with that, and you know, you can ask Renique. I'm not typically the person that, like, I've always told her, when we go to, like, we would go see churches, she would listen to the music, and I would listen to the preaching, because that's who I am. I connected more with the preacher's preaching, but for the first time, I was deeply moved by a song, and the first time I heard it, I had to sit down. I had to take in a moment and let it just feel the things that I was feeling. And then, the second time I heard it, I'd been here a while now. I had some roles in church, and then we had to do it just before the community prayer and the community greet. And thank the Lord I wasn't on community prayer. I was on announcements because I was fully weeping. I fully broke down. I could not contain it. And so for that 5 minutes, I went to the bathroom and did everything in my power to just get to where I could do the announcements. Because it just impacted me so deeply. Because the reality is So I made it through today. Got a little lost. Sorry about that. I made it through today. Barely. It was close. It was a close call. Because of how it was affecting me, you know, I realized something is going on here. I have to do some digging. I have to figure out what's going on. So I looked at the lyrics and I asked, you know, where am I? Why is this hitting me so much? I went to Jenna and Carrie and Renique, some of my other colleagues. And I told them kind of some of those things that were going on. And I realized those were my words. Those were my feelings. I was giving everything. I was putting everything I had, pursuing a dream that I'd been pursuing for so long, doing all of the projects that I was doing, and I was feeling exhausted, that I just had nothing left in the tank, and I still didn't see the results that I wanted to see. In the midst of that exhaustion, though, that's why that kind of tagline, the almost chorus of the song, if you can call it that, I rise up with the strength that is not my own. Because that's what it is. In those moments where we've bitten off more than we can chew, when we're overextended, we're exhausting ourselves, we're not seeing the results, we're doing everything that we can, but yet each and every day we can rise and we can do it again. Even when we're exhausted, even when we're tired, not because we are pulling the strength, not because we are strong enough to do everything on our own, but because God is pouring that strength into us. I realize that the thing that got me out of the bed each morning when it was really tough was the strength that God was giving me. When we find ourselves just like Peter, stepping out and realizing we took on way more than we can chew with this one. We've done way too much. And we're overwhelmed and consumed with all the things that we have on our plate. We can trust that God is there. God is there with a hand outstretched to catch us if we fall. Just like we show grace to Peter, let's recognize those areas of growth in ourselves. Let's see where our character development has come in. Let's extend grace to ourselves for maybe the places where we fell a little flat. Maybe let's realize where we've overloaded ourselves and recognize that in the midst of all of those emotions, all of those feelings, remember that you can rise with a strength that is not your own. Because Jesus is standing right beside you, ready to catch you if you fall.
When my work takes me places I don't want to go, Christ be for me, and my heart aches with sorrow as I hear.